Yesterday would have been the 93rd birthday of Johnny Schmitz. If you remember Johnny Schmitz, it's likely you were either a Chicago Cubs fan or a resident of Wausau, Wisconsin. In his day, Schmitz was a pitching phenomenon, according to our guest, Gerald Poder, professor of American Studies at Lawrence University. Gerald, welcome to the show.
Good to be on.
So Johnny Schmitz, he was born in Wausau in 1910, made it into the big leagues at 18. How unusual was that for the time?
That was pretty unusual. Actually, he was born in 1920. He's from Wausau, born in 1920. And he made his debut at the age of 18 for the Cubs. And actually went on to have a pretty solid major league career. His nickname was Bear Tracks, and the reason for that is that his feet were huge. He wasn't necessarily a very tall man, but yeah, I guess sometimes people of average height have huge feet. And he took a photograph when he was young, sort of with his spikes up in the air, like, you know, leaning on something. And someone said, "My God, you've got these huge feet. They're like bear tracks." And so his nickname was Bear Tracks throughout his major league career.
I guess you could do worse for a nickname.
Oh, now, well, in baseball, you can do much worse.
Yeah. Now, I gather he batted right, pitched left, also a little out of the ordinary?
Very, very out of the ordinary. I can only think of a couple of major leaguers who batted right-handed and threw left-handed, whether they were pitchers or outfielders. That testifies to some ambidexterity, I think, in his genetic makeup, because that is very, very rare.
He enlisted in the military during World War II. His career started in 1938. So, like almost everyone else, he went to war. How did that affect his career when he came back?
Well, Johnny Schmitz, unfortunately, I have to say, is one of the most luckless Major League Baseball players, perhaps in the history of the game. And I say that because he managed to miss out on playing in the World Series a number of times, actually four separate times, and the first time was because he was in the military. He was in the military between 1943 and 1945, and he was Cubs property. The last pennant that the Chicago Cubs won, as many Cubs fans or all Cubs fans know, is 1945. So Schmitz, who got back to the majors with the Cubs in 46, missed out on playing in the World Series in 1945 because of his military service.
So that's one missed World Series. How did he miss other ones?
Here are the others, and they're really excruciating. He toils with the Cubs until 1951, and the Cubs are a very bad team by the late 40s. But in 1951, he gets a huge break. He's traded to the Brooklyn Dodgers, who were in first place in 1951. And once again, it looks like Schmitz is going to play in the World Series. But as it turns out, the Dodgers, who had a 13.5 game lead in August in 1951 to the Giants, ended up losing that lead, tying on the last day of the pennant race in 1951. Two out of three game playoff. They lose the first, they win the second, or they're tied 1-1 in games going to the third game. The Dodgers are up 4-1 in the bottom of the ninth to the Giants in the third and final playoff game, and they lose on Bobby Thompson's famous home run. And Schmitz is in the Dodgers' dugout. Having been liberated from the Cubs, he thinks he's going to the World Series, but no, Bobby Thompson in the last inning, after his team has lost a 13.5 game lead, and he's not going to the World Series. However, there's still time for him. There's still an opportunity for him, and it comes the next year. He is still with the Dodgers in 1952, so had he stayed with the Dodgers, who won the pennant in 1952, he would have gone to the World Series. But no, he's sold to another team, so he misses out with the Dodgers. But the team that he gets sold to, I'm not making this up, is the Yankees. So
right, sure
he
thing
another
there.
Another opportunity to be in the World Series. And in fact, the Yankees in 1952 went on to win the World Series. But no, in September of 52, he gets traded from the Yankees to the Reds. So he misses out on the World Series again. But there's still hope. There's still one more opportunity, because in the off season of 52-53, Schmitz gets reacquired by the Yankees. So, once again, maybe he's going to the World Series, but no. In the 53 season, a season that the Yankees would win the World Series, he's put on waivers and claimed by the Washington Senators in 1953, a team as far from the World Series as you can possibly be, and he never gets to the World Series.
But he was a good pitcher, though, right?
He was a good pitcher on bad teams, and that's sort of almost like a term of art. He made the All-Star team twice in 46 and 48. He led the league in strikeouts 1 year in 46, and that's, you know, that's a pretty impressive achievement with all the great pitchers coming back from the war, that, you know, that he was a strikeout leader. In those days, there weren't huge strikeout numbers. His strikeout number to lead the league, I think, was in the 130s. So it's not like, you know, he struck out 300 batters, but, you know, he did lead the league, and he was a very solid, dependable starter for the Cubs, unfortunately, on bad Cubs teams.
Wow. Almost like he was cursed to never make it to the World Series.
I think he was cursed like the Cubs. I think he was cursed like the Cubs. In fact, in many ways, he symbolically represents, I think, the futility of the Chicago Cubs, and, you know, during that time and afterwards.
So he retires in, I think, the late 50s. What did he do for the next half century?
Well, you know, he was a good Wisconsin boy, you know, born and raised in Wausau, and that's where he came back to after his career ended. He was a groundskeeper at a golf course and basically kept a very low profile until he died only, you know, only 2 years ago. By all reports, he was, you know, again, very typical of Wisconsin, a very modest man, an unassuming man. Certainly, you know, he played briefly in New York for the Dodgers and Yankees, but he was not a New York kind of personality.
And he ends up, and how did this happen, in a painting by Norman Rockwell?
In a painting by Norman Rockwell. And you know, again, if you're a Cubs fan, this is almost the symbol of futility. Norman Rockwell decides in 1948 that he wants to do a baseball painting. And Rockwell lives in New England, so he heads to Boston, where the Cubs are playing a doubleheader with the Boston Braves, then Boston Braves. And what Rockwell would do is he would pose people before the game, or pose people preliminarily, take photographs and work from that. And he ends up painting four Chicago Cubs and a bat boy in what became a famous painting, and maybe some of our listeners have seen it. It's called The Dugout, and it shows four forlorn Chicago Cubs sort of staring out on the field, and just to the right, in the sort of the right-hand corner of the painting, is Johnny Schmitz. The others are the manager, Charlie Grimm, Bob Rush, and Rube Walker, and they're just sort of staring out forlornly at the field. And I think even then, only 3 years removed from their pennant in 1945, Rockwell understood that the Cubs were almost like a cursed franchise, and Schmitz, I think Schmitz symbolized that. And actually, in the game, there was a doubleheader that day. It was in May 1948, and after Rockwell set the paintings up, the Cubs went out and lost both games of the doubleheader, and one of the players in the painting, Rube Walker, was hit in the head by a ball.
Wow. So did that painting end up becoming a symbol for Cubs fans over the years?
I think it is. Scott Simon, who is an NPR essayist is known for basically linking that painting. I think it hangs in his office, I think he said. linking that painting with the futility of the Cubs, and there really is a sad sack quality to this painting. The fans are booing them. It's a road, you know, it's the Boston crowd, so they're booing them, and they look like awful things are happening to them. And if I were a Cubs fan and I was looking to symbolize or encapsulate the futility of that team over decades and decades, you can't do any better than this Norman Rockwell in the dugout painting.
Back to Wausau. Does the city of Wausau look at Johnny Schmitz as a local legend?
Very definitely. And again, I think that he goes back to Warsaw. He doesn't big time it. You know, just as politicians get what we call Potomac fever and refuse to go home to their districts after their careers end and they stay in Washington, many players end up living in, you know, the more glamorous cities that they played in. Schmitz wasn't like that. He ended his career and there was no question where he was going to go. He was going to go back to Warsaw, where he grew up, where he lived, where he knew everyone. And he was, I think, a bit of a local legend for all, you know, for all these years. But he lived for over a half century after he retired. But he wasn't, again, he wasn't the kind of guy to try to draw attention to himself. So he lived pretty quietly. I think he was the kind of person, if you wanted to talk to him about baseball, he would talk to you, but he wouldn't sort of strut into, you know, stores or taverns and say, "I'm Johnny Schmitz." Mm.
All right, Gerald, thank you so much for sharing a story with us today.
My pleasure.
Gerald Poder is a professor of American Studies at Lawrence University. If you have a suggestion for a Wisconsin legend, someone from Wisconsin you'd like to hear more about, call our hotline, 855-683-5422.